The Maine outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your way. So get outside and find it in the Maine outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your outdoors hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Thank you, and good evening, one and all, and we welcome you to Maine Outdoors, Maine's longest-running outdoor talk radio program. We're so pleased you could be with us tonight, and we have a toll-free statewide number if you care to join in and be on our program tonight.
We certainly do, and the number is 1-800-966-1039, and you have to dial the whole number if you're local even.
You bet.
1-800-966-1039.
And you're listening to us on the Voice of Maine News Talk Network, 101.3, 103.9, and 95.1 FM in Rockland. Our guest tonight we'll introduce in just a second. He's been on our show before, and we're so pleased to have him aboard. But first, the crew, the volunteer crew, who make this show possible every week. The engineers in the booth there behind the toggle switches, Mr. Norm Plord, the Baron of... No, you're not the Baron. You're the sweetheart of the Grand Lake Stream.
I got you mixed up
with Jim.
Good evening, everybody. And you know what? On my game camera, most of my pictures are nighttime deer pictures. Wonder if they'd consider night hunting.
That's when to hunt.
That is. That would get you in big trouble. And with him to his right, the engineer emeritus, the Baron of Fields Pond, Mr. Jim Layton.
Well, good evening, folks. Pull up a chair. We got a great show for you tonight. A wonderful guest.
And our co-host, our esteemed co-host, the only guy in this crew that gets paid big bucks.
Yeah.
He's a master Maine guide. He's written a number of great books on fishing, my friend Robert F. Lehman.
Thank you, sir. Pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you aboard, Robert, and I like your hat tonight.
I bet you do. What's it say on the front?
It says Northwoods Sporting Journal.
It's got a fish on one side, a fish on the other.
I like that.
Light. Yeah, I thought I'd like that. That's why I wear that.
I appreciate you wearing that. It's good to show the flag.
I think you gave that to me.
I think I did, yeah. Anyway, I'd like to introduce our guest at this time. As I said, he's been on the program before. He's a guy who knows his way around a brook trout. His name is Bob Mallard, and he's an author and a trout activist. And he's got a lot of other credentials here, but we'll get to those in a minute. But anyway, nice to have you aboard, Bob Mallard.
Thanks for having me.
And he has a great new book out called Square Tail. Beautiful, beautiful book. And all about brook trout, and we're going to be talking to him. If you're a brook trout person and you have any questions, this is the guy to ask. In fact, Bob and I both love brook trout almost as much as Bob Mallard. So Robert and I may be arm wrestling to see who asked the questions of Mr. Mallard.
Might.
I'm not sure.
We'll see.
All right. We'll see how it goes. I mean, if Joe Biden can arm wrestle, you and I can, right?
I would think so.
He
does push-ups. That's right.
He does push-ups.
He has a lot of malarkey.
Yeah, okay. Let's see. What else here? Again, 1-800-966-1039 is the number if you want to be on our show tonight and ask a question of our guest. Now it's time for Outdoor Digest, brought to you by the Northwoods Sporting Journal and Maine Outdoor Publications. Want to remind you, we have a spanking new website for the Northwoods Sporting Journal. It's chock-a-block full of great writing about hunting and fishing in the outdoors. We commend it to you. If you'd like to check it out, it's www.sportingjournal.com. And if you'd like to send me an email, if you have a suggestion for a guest on our show, we welcome that. And you can email me at vpaulr, that's V as in Victor, P-A-U-L-R, at tds.net. And let's see, well, Bob and I want to remind you, too, that it's still time enough to get a Christmas gift for the sportsman in your family. And Bob and I have some books we'd like to commend to you if you're looking for a gift. You can check out our books on our website. Just click on Outdoor Books, and you can get a complete lineup of the books we have available. Those make great Christmas gifts, as well as a subscription to the Northwoods Sporting Journal.
Right, great.
And there's still time. If you want to call during the week at the office, you can call Alicia. She'll fix you up with a subscription at 732-4880. A couple of things here before we get to the fishing report. Black powder season is still in full swing. I had a chance, Bob, to hit the woods on Saturday.
With your black powder rifle.
With my black powder rifle. Mm-hmm. And You know, it's the most ideal hunting conditions you could ask for.
Yeah, that's what you were saying.
All the standing water was frozen, so you could walk on it in the woods.
Yeah.
2 or 3 inches of fluffy snow on top of
that. Nice and quiet.
You could sneak like a cat.
Oh, I'll bet you.
And I had a chance to see a couple of does.
You, so it didn't do any good otherwise, right?
No doe from it. But it's still exciting.
They haven't gotten it. There's no bucks around anyway.
No, but it's still exciting to at least
get out, yeah.
Be able to sneak up on one, you know?
I had 3 bucks on my game camera.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Good for you.
Taste.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good pictures, but yeah, they didn't taste very good.
Anyway, we had a good time, and I'm getting a lot of reports, Bob, Robert, that people are beginning to wonder if we have a shortage of bucks in Maine. But
I think we do. I've talked to more hunters, a bunch of them this morning in church, that haven't seen a buck this year yet.
Lots of does.
They've seen does almost every day. They've seen does. Yeah. A lot of them have stands like you do.
Yeah.
You know, they put the scope on them, and they can't see any kind of growth at all for an antler.
You know, maybe this winter while I'm away in Florida working hard down there, you might want to get Nathan Bieber, the deer guy, to come on and talk about that.
That might be a good thing, yeah. I could use a real guest. That's right.
I think we have smarter bucks.
Maybe that's it.
Howdy.
Maybe that's it. Maybe they're there. They're just too smart for us.
That's right.
You're probably right.
That's what I'd say right there. Yeah.
Okay. Before Bob's fishing report, just a couple of program notes. Bob's Christmas show will be next week, and he'll have all kinds of giveaways, mucho trivia questions, and I may call in from sunny Florida to help along with the impersonations.
Yes.
So, Bob's going to sing for us.
I'm looking forward to that.
I'm going to impersonate a tired old man down in the Florida Keys when I call
that
in.
That should be easy.
Anyway, good show next week. And then for the next, what did you say?
No.
Oh, you're in trouble. Let's see. During the holidays, we'll run the oldies but the goodies. And so there'll be nobody here in the flesh, but you can listen to us via the magic of recording on the Christmas and the New Year holiday. I think it's time now to bring in the band, Norm.
You want to bring in the band?
Bring in the band.
All right.
I'm a big get ready, Bob.
Oh, yeah.
And you work for me. Just a minute. Now.
Yeah.
This is my rock.
Oh, yeah.
These are my reeds. Kill it, Norm. Kill it.
I wonder, Bob, if Bob Mallon, I wonder Robert. I'm going to call Bob Lehman tonight is going to be Robert because we have a guest named Bob and we don't want to get things confused. So I'm going to call you Robert tonight.
Robert F.
Do you think Bob Mallard would he fish for a bass?
I tell you what you could have for a question when you call in.
What?
What does the V stand for?
What does the B stand for?
V.
Oh, V.
V as in Victor. V.
Oh, I can't divulge
it. You can't divulge it.
It's
okay,
a secret.
Well, anyway,
Bob, do you fish for bass?
I used to, actually.
You don't now, though, right?
No.
Anyway.
Happen to jump on a fly.
Yeah. What's the report?
I just got a real shot report tonight.
Okay.
And very interesting, I think.
Okay, go ahead.
And, you know, this time of year, the ladies and your wife, my wife, and probably Bob Mallard's wife, what the heck can I buy for him, right? He's got everything, right?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to run through a few things that we probably don't have. Or we might have, but like another one.
Okay.
And it's always nice to get another one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe a different color, a different size, you know, like a fly rod or something. Anyway, I'm going to run through real quick a few things. So get your pencil and papers and write this down, folks, because these are things that men like. They really do. They like a pair of slippers that you can lounge in and go outdoors with the dog as well. Same pair of slippers, right? Inside, outside slippers. Those are great. Men love them, all right?
All right.
Another thing is a nice spud. And if you can find one, that is. They're hard to find. But a nice spud to check the ice with.
I thought you were talking about potatoes.
I was wondering if it was a potato spud.
That's a nice spud. Probably won't know what you're talking about.
It's an ice chisel. Yeah, you chop a hole in the ice with a spud.
Another good thing would be a wading staff. A folding wader staff would be even better.
If you wade.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if they don't have one, ask him if he got one sometime, his husband or boyfriend or whatever. And how about an inexpensive fly rod, like an 8-foot is an average one? L.L. Bean has an 8-foot you could buy right now for a little over $100, complete outfit. I have two of them. I use them all the time.
So it'd be great for a beginner, right?
I'll tell you, not only that, yeah, beginner or an expert.
Yeah.
Because, you know, an extra one is always good to have in the car and to bang around, you know.
Hey, speaking of fly fishing, were you at the Penobscot Fly Fishers seminar they had today?
I almost went, but I had other things to do, and I never made it. Yeah. But
I wonder how it went. I hope they had
I heard that it went real well. Yeah. Did you go, Bob?
No.
No.
Good.
And so a couple more things real quick. A framed photo, maybe, of that big one that you wanted to get framed. That would always be nice. A really good pair of sunglasses. They don't think of these things, do they? But I'm thinking now that we wouldn't mind having something like that.
You know, I've always wanted some really good Polaroid sunglasses for being able to see the fish.
See?
But I never buy them because, A, I'm too cheap, and, B, I lose them. They last a week.
You can
I
get
lose
floating
them.
Ones.
Right now, I would take a 70-pound thrust electric motor for my boat.
Oh, you're asking, aren't you?
Well, that's why I don't ask for it.
A couple more quick things. Right. A Mad Bomber hat.
A Mad Bomber hat.
Love them. Those are great.
Those are really good.
Yeah.
Yes, they are. You know, you go out some morning with a dog or something, and you pull those down over your ears and button them, and they're just great.
All
just great. How about a really good hunting or fishing book, like Bob Mallard's new Square Tail here? That would be great. Or Paul Reynolds. Hunting log book.
Deer Hunter's log book.
Yeah, or fishing log
Maine book. Angler's log book.
Bob Lehman's trolling flies.
Or my backtrack.
Yes, backtrack.
Okay.
Salmon angler.
All right.
One more thing, if you don't mind.
Okay.
I tell you, what did I have here? Oh, yes. And we shouldn't miss this ball. I mean, everybody could get this. A subscription to the Northwood Sporting Journal.
Oh, I thought he was going to say a pint of single malt.
Oh, heaven no.
A copy of the Northwood, a subscription to the Northwood Journal.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Good idea. Good suggestions. And I can tell you're getting in the holiday spirit.
Yes, I am.
That's great. Okay. Do you have anything on your Christmas list, Bob Mallard, that you want to put on the air?
Oh, boy. I have 20 fly rods, so I'm
20. Do you have 20 fly rods?
I have 20, yeah.
So. This guy has probably 50. Yeah. How many fly rods do you have, Bob? Honestly.
Alice asked me that question the other day. She said, now, just how many
if
you got
answer.
On that rack over there?
How many do you have, Bob?
I would, at one time, I had probably 35, 40, and it, at least, yeah.
Yeah.
It's
never
enough.
Thing to do.
Never enough.
Never enough.
You never have enough.
So
no,
the,
you know,
the
you're
answer,
different size, different lengths, different weights.
Yeah, the answer to the question about how many is, how many shoes do you have?
There you go. There you go.
That's what I can ask Alice.
We'd probably
got 22 pair of shoes.
Oh, you be careful, Bob. I wouldn't go there. You're going to be in the doghouse.
You remember, you got to go home tonight. You got to go home tonight, Bob.
Okay.
She's not listening.
Okay. On that note, we will wrap up the fishing report. Our guest, if you joined us late, is Bob Mallard. He's got a great new book out called Square Tail, and we'll be talking to him about trout and his book in just a minute. First, we have an outdoor trivia question, which is good for a couple of beautiful streamer flies tied by Ron McKusick.
Really nice.
And our guest, Bob Mallard, has agreed to read the trivia question and to judge the veracity of your response. Go ahead, Bob.
What is the Latin name for brook trout?
And the number is?
1-800-966-1039.
You stay with us and we'll be right back.
More Maine Outdoors next on 101.3 Augusta, 103.9 Bangor, 95.1 Rockland, the voice of Maine.
Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors, and we have a trivia question. The question is, what is the Latin name for brook trout? And Jamie, you're in Maine Outdoors, and Bob Mallard is waiting to judge your answer.
Okay, is it Sabulinus fontinellus?
We have a winner.
We do have a winner. Did he pronounce it right, Bob?
Pretty darn close.
Yeah. Congratulations. You have won two beautiful hand-tied flies by tire Ron McKusick.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Beautiful.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. And how did you know that? Did you have that on the tip of your tongue, or did you have to look it up?
Google.
I actually had a book, Pocket Fly Fishing.
Oh, all right. Good. You know, we used to call Bob Lehman Salvelinus fontinellus himself.
Yeah, what happened to that?
I don't know.
I started calling you Salmonella.
Salmonella.
You know the Latin name for salmon?
Salmo Salah, right?
Sebago.
Yeah, Sebago. Hey, congratulations, Jamie. And before we put you on hold and get your mailing address so we can mail the slides out to you, anything else on your mind tonight?
No, not really.
Are you a trout guy? Do you fish for trout?
I do. I'm fairly new at it, but I've been a couple times with a buddy of mine up the east branch of the Penobscot.
Oh, good. Stay on the line and keep your radio tuned up because you're going to learn a lot more about trout before 8 o'clock comes around, all right?
Okay, great. I will do that.
Okay, thanks for listening and stay on the line, okay?
Okay, will do. Thank you.
All right, and we appreciate Lynn calling. We're sorry we didn't get a chance to get you, but maybe next week, Lynn, you can call in when Bob is giving away all kinds of things on his big Christmas show. Yeah. Okay, if you joined us late, Bob Mallard is our guest, and Bob's been writing about trout for many, many years. He first started writing for the Northwood Sporting Journal 20 years or more ago. He wrote a column called Technical Fly Fisher, and since then he's become the publisher of Fly Fisher Quarterly, Fly Fish America, right?
America.
He's a publisher of that, and he's written some other books. One of his books, we had him on a few years ago to talk about 50 best places in Maine to fish for trout. And he has another book called 25 Best Towns in America to Fish for Trout. The new book is called Square Tail. And before we parse our way through the book here, Bob, just for the benefit of those who may not know you as well as Robert and I do, what's your background? How did you wind up being a trout activist?
I retired from software in my early 40s. I moved to Maine, and I opened Kennebec River Outfitters in Madison. Stayed open for 15 years. And as Paul said, my first paid writing assignment was for the Northwood Sporting Journal. So I've been, I guide. I design flies. I write. This is my third book. Working on two other books, and I think, as they used to say, a sportsman that's not a conservationist is not a sportsman.
There you go. And one of the I asked you before we went on the air, I think you're also well known in Maine as what we call a trout activist. And Ted Williams has written not the baseball player, the other Ted Williams has written a beautiful foreword in endorsement of your book. And said some wonderful things about you and all the good things you've done to protect trout in Maine. What is a trout activist, and what's your mission in life other than writing books?
Well, I guess an activist on anything, whether it's hunting or fishing or trout, or it's someone who puts in personal time to see that this, whatever it is, remains indefinitely. There's a lot of people advocating for a lot of things. And for me, used to be fishing, and now it's, kind of fish, and it's more specific, it's native fish.
And you want to see trout protected in Maine.
I don't want to see them go away.
Yeah.
And having lived in southern New England, I've seen where, pretty much all they have left in Massachusetts, it's stocked rainbows and brown trout, and we've lost a lot in Maine. We've lost a lot in my 20 years here. So,
and you've been, when you say an activist, you've been involved in testifying in Augusta on trout issues?
Yep. I was part of the SAM Fishing Initiative Committee 18 years ago or something. I helped found a TU chapter. I helped found a group called Dudeen Angling Society. And found Native Fish Coalition, which is going quite well. But I've testified, written a lot. We raise money, etc.
What do you think? What do you think poses the greatest peril to the trout fishery in Maine right now? What are the dangers?
Invasive fish, above all.
Above all, right?
In a lot of the country, it's habitat. It's warming. It's
but in Maine, it's the
Maine,
invasive
it's
fish.
Invasive fish.
We're talking
period.
About,
end of
talking
story.
About pike.
Believe it or not, we're losing more fish to invasive minnows, bait fish, than we are.
Are we really?
Yeah. I mean, pike, bass, muskies, they get all the press.
Why do the invasive minnows pose such a threat to brookies?
A lot of the same things: competition for food and space, predation.
Oh, okay.
Golden shiners. They get into a small brook trout pond. They're a schooling minnow. They get, as you know, 8 inches. And they're one of the things is baby trouts, a juvenile brook trout. They occupy the shorelines. When you go to launch a canoe, you'll see them down at your feet right. scampering around. And big trout stay away from them. And you get golden shiners in there, and they're running the same water, and they're eating them, and they're disrupting eggs. And they disrupt the food. I've seen golden shiners kill hatches completely, starting with the big drakes and working
away. Oh, no kidding. I didn't realize that they posed a threat. That's interesting.
Smelt are very bad as well.
Yeah. One of the things that kind of surprised me, I read not all of your book, but most of it, and one of the things that surprised me, knowing you, I know you have strong feelings. I know you've been an activist for many years. I kind of figured that you would really raise hell in your book over Splake, but you seem to remain kind of noncommittal on that. Was that by accident? Or?
No, I talked about them in the hybridization section,
yeah.
and I will always go on record that they're a bad idea. We got better ways to spend our money.
Yeah.
But they
are they a threat to our trout fishery?
They can be. Predation. We saw what happened at Thistle Pond. That was a failure, abysmal failure. It took 8 years of playing around
with
it.
Well, that was just a screw-up by the biologists.
It was just terrible. It didn't work. I think you might remember I was one of the first people to challenge that idea that we were going to somehow eradicate smelt with Splake and have this brook trout fishery left at the end.
Yeah. Did they ever send those biologists to jail, do you know?
But, you know, I'd love to know how much money we actually spent and then ended up having to reclaim it anyway.
Well, if you had your druthers, would you outlaw Splake in Maine?
I wouldn't put my money into it. I would put that money elsewhere.
You would?
I would, if it was my call, we'd be doing less stalking and maybe not in gross numbers, but in less places.
Do we still put Splake in waters? We don't put Splake in waters that have wild trout, do we?
That's what they say.
As far as we know, they don't.
Well,
right?
Yeah, but they move around. They show up in places like Jason Cook. We've seen
them. Do they?
Yeah. They drop out of Ragged and they drop out of. They've shown up in the West Branch of the Penobscot coming down from Holbrook.
And when the anti-Splake people complain, the response from the biologists has been that they don't reproduce. But that's not necessarily true, right?
That's not what some biologists say.
Hey, we'll be back with more. We hope you'll stay with us right here on Maine Outdoors. Okay. All right, we're back again with Bob Mallard. And again, if you have a question for Bob, if you're a trout person and you want to ask Bob any question, we welcome your calls. What's the number, Bob?
1-800-966-1039.
Okay, and that's a toll-free statewide number. If you do call, we ask that you turn your radio down. That way you won't get a distracting echo. Okay, Bob, we were talking about Splake. Let's switch gears a little bit. In your book, in the early part of your book, there's an interesting page on what you call terminology. And I found that interesting because even though I'm fairly well read in trout and anything affecting trout, because I like them almost as much as you and Bob Lehman, I've always been confused about what's the difference between a wild trout and native aren't the same critter, right?
Yeah, I mean it.
What's the difference?
I tell people go to the dictionary and. Yeah. Wild means born in nature.
Right.
The opposite of stock.
Okay,
click
your mic up. Just click it up. So, there you go.
Yeah, stock means born in a hatchery. Wild means born in nature. If you look at a dictionary, that's what it says. Native is indigenous. It's historically present. So a rainbow that lives in Maine that was born in nature in the Kennebec and Bingham, it's not indigenous. It's a non-native species, but it is a wild fish.
Okay.
So a brook trout in Maine, in most places they're found, is a wild native fish.
It could not have been born in a hatchery, or it wouldn't be wild.
Right out. If you're using the term wild, that pulls hatchery right out of the game. So the terms are stocked, wild, native, and I use the terms wild native together most of the time.
Okay.
What's happened is some fish and game agencies are starting to use native to mean genetically pure or something, which has nothing to do with it. Use genetically pure. We're hearing more and more where people are referring to anything born in nature as being native. But if you just look at the dictionary, take the dictionary meaning for native, historically present, indigenous,
But to bring it down to basics, to bedrock here, in Maine, the ponds that have stock trout, what if those trout reproduce? Does that make them wild?
Those, they're brood. If a stock trout meets another stock trout and successfully has babies in the wild, they're wild fish.
They're wild trout.
Yeah. And technically, you could argue, and you should argue, that even a stock brook trout in a historically present brook trout pond is a native fish. It just happens to be a stocked native fish.
So I think I read somewhere that like there are 25 ponds. Oh, no, there are ponds that have fish that were stocked more than 25 years ago. So ergo, those are wild fish.
And in some cases, just because they were stocked doesn't mean that there was any impact on the genetics of the fish that were there historically.
So you're saying that a trout that is raised in a hatchery can't be genetically pure?
It wouldn't be genetically the same as what was there. It would most likely have a lower level of genetic diversity due to how hatcheries are run.
Okay.
But this 25-year thing was a byproduct of the heritage list, the heritage law. And 5-year-old brook trout in Maine are actually pretty rare. Labrador, they see them 10 years. So if you've got a pond that hasn't been stocked in 25 years, it's 5 generations of
it's producing wild trout.
Yeah, and we also know that we've seen in other states, and I believe in Maine, they've gone into the upstate New York and they've DNA'd brook trout out of water that's been stocked for generations. And they've found no integration between the stocked fish and the wild fish. And some of that has to do with the fact that the stockfish are dying before they have an opportunity, or they don't know how. So just because we stock doesn't mean we did genetic damage. There's other reasons you don't stock.
I think all he has said is true. But a brook trout is a brook trout, and that's what the biologists will tell you.
A brook trout is a char. Yeah.
Yeah, and a brook trout is a brook trout. But everything he said is true.
Stock
trout picks up things genetically from the hatchery and so forth. There's no question about that.
Now, at the risk of sounding like an elitist, Norm, forgive me, Norm.
Please.
I love to fish for brookies, and they don't have to be big ones. I just love catching, you know me, dry flies on top.
Right.
To me, that's the essence of fishing.
That's right.
But the idea that I can go to some pond X and I can catch a trout that is related to trout eons ago.
Mm.
Maybe I'm just an elitist, but I find that kind of exciting.
No matter if it's stocked or native.
The fact that its ancestors were here, you know, sometime after the glacier is exciting.
That's right.
If you tell me, if you put your worm in that brook right there, you catch a trout. But it was a trout that was raised in the hatchery, and its flesh is kind of white.
That's environment.
It depends if you're a meat eater or fishing for the enjoyment. There is a difference.
Okay. And now we get cut to the chase. Bob Mallard, have you ever eaten a brook trout?
Of course I have.
Oh, you have?
Yes, sir.
Seems to me you and I had some knockdown, drag-out arguments back years ago about whether it was okay to kill trout.
Well, it's a matter of sustainability. When I was young, we ate a lot of brook trout backcountry.
Yeah.
And there were far less people, access was harder, and we didn't know what our own impact was. And it's not that Paul Reynolds' breakfast of brook trout is going to doom brook trout.
Right.
Thousands of Paul Reynolds' breakfast brook trout could hurt him.
Okay.
The thing I bring up every time somebody argues, the impact of our actions, there's a term, you've heard it, we've all used it, fished out.
Fished out.
Mm-hmm. Fished out.
Fished
we've
out.
Said it for decades, generations. Yeah. You go to a pond that's not good, and somebody says, is this worth fishing? And you say, no. And they say, why? And you say, it's been fished out.
I like to hear that.
We've all said it.
I like to hear that.
And that's why it's
true.
But the regulations are so stiff these days. Is that still a serious danger, Bob?
Depends on the size of the pond. Depends on the regs.
So?
The percentage of heritage waters that are still five fish, I think it's 50%.
Depends on the fisherman too.
Do you really? Yeah.
It's 50%.
Yeah. How do you like the seasons on brook trout right now?
I believe personally that open year-round fishing is not only not a bad thing, it can be a good thing if it's done in conjunction with sustainable length and bag limits.
I agree.
Opening day is a disaster.
I tell you, I was one who started the opening the season on brook trout and brooks and streams from August 15th to September 30. And Sam was against me for years and years, and the writers like Gene Letourneau was against me for years.
Yeah.
And the biologists finally agreed, and they got it through. And you know something? It didn't hurt the trout any because there's no fishermen late in the season. And the season was in some places no fish, in other places it was one fish, and people will not go for one fish to keep, that is.
And they're also, it eliminates that opening day where these fish have had 5 months to get stupid again.
Yeah.
I mean, we all know the damage done in the first week of the season. Sure. Anybody who doesn't isn't out there fishing.
Yeah.
So do you think the regulations in Maine on brook trout are sufficient? Are they stiff enough?
I think in some places they are.
In some places they're not?
No. Yeah. I don't believe – well, I tell people all the time, find me an easy access general law brook trout pond that's worth fishing. You know, most of the places I fish have either a fly fishing regulation or they're hard to get to or they've got a two fish or something. But the general law management – Has failed us.
Yeah, one of the ways I try to figure out where to fish is find out where the laws are the toughest.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
Mathematics. You know,
a lot of people
kill
do that,
fewer
right?
fish.
A trout is not that easy to catch.
No.
You know, I mean, it just isn't everybody that throws a line in there that's going to catch a trout.
See, Maine was very much...
know a lot of things about how to fish, you know, with a fly or a worm or whatever, where to put it, what you look for, like in a stream, if you know your spring holes. You know, your pools or your rips or whatever, when they're going to be. And there's a lot of study that goes with that. And most people don't really get into that so much. Even basic foods, what do the trout eat and so forth. You know, hoppers and larvae and all that kind of stuff, bottom feeders, they are mostly. But the nymphs work pretty good. Do you fish nymphs most?
Lots of nymphs.
Absolutely, sure.
Yeah.
But we were protected for years up here by tough access. We don't have tough access anymore.
No, that's true.
And And that changed the game.
Yeah.
When you put roads in every pond.
Are we through talking about eating trout? I wanted to quote, can I quote you from your book? This is good. He says, this is Bob Mallard speaking in his book on terminology, and like golf, you don't have to eat the ball to enjoy the sport. So I mentioned that to my wife, and she said, well, has he ever tried to cook golf balls? You can bake them in one of those express cookers for hours, and they still taste like a golf ball.
They don't soften up.
No.
The trout tastes pretty good.
They do, yeah. So you don't – seriously now, do you harbor any – oh, what's the correct word? Disappointment, the fact that Bob and I would take a trout and eat it on occasion?
And as I said, I don't believe that any one person's – individual act is a risk.
Okay.
I think the aggregate actions of the masses have to be considered, and we are part of that aggregate impact. So my position's always been that, you know, I said recently, you know, with this nonsense about harvesting to improve fishing, we can harvest our way into trouble, and we've done it over and over. I've never seen us harvest our way out of trouble.
You seem to be more of a reasonable guy than you were 20 years ago. Have you?
You guys just got used to
me. You got soft. I think you got soft in your
I'm
old
the
age.
Same.
You know what Lee Wolf always said?
What?
And he was really an expert on fishing, this guy. A lot of people out there will recognize, and you do, Bob, Lee Wolf. He would say, keep the small fish and throw the big fish back.
They're just like, you know, deer. If you continue to just chip away at the top of your deer herd, pretty soon you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a reason Maine doesn't see 4-pound brook trout in small ponds anymore.
Yeah.
And when I say that, figuratively.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've seen – I think when people say I've gone soft or softer, I just think that we've seen a lot of loss in 20 years. Maine has seen more loss in 20 years than – the last 20 years than Mass, New Hampshire, Vermont put together. They did their damage 50 years ago. We're doing our damage now. And because people have lost their own favorite pond, and I lost my favorite pond about 5 years ago to Golden Shiners, and maybe closer to 10 years ago. So I think as Mainers are seeing more and more of decline, they lose their own pond. Some of the things that we said 20 years ago don't sound that radical today.
I know they can get rid of those Golden Shiners real easy.
I got a place for you to go if you think you can.
Put a couple of bass in there, and there's the end of your shiners.
And there's the end of your brook trout when they're done eating the shiners.
Oh, no, we just catch them out later. Catch them out later, and they'll be cleaned already for your truck road.
Okay, Bob, I want to explore more of your book here in a minute, but we have to stop and make a buck if it's okay.
Yes, we do.
Bob Mallard wanted to tell the folks at home about General Appliance and Brewer, who've been our sponsor here, one of our sponsors for many, many years. And we commend them to you, and Bob's going to tell you why.
Yeah, absolutely. General Appliance and Brewer is the place to go for your camp appliance needs, whether they are gas lights, gas refrigerators, gas freezers, or top-of-the-line compost toilets.
Ride the wave, baby.
Thank you, James. I appreciate it. And General Appliance is located at 91 Center Street in Brewer. They're real easy to get to. Cross the old Bangor Bridge, take a right and a left, you're on Center Street, and they got practically the whole block there on the right. And in these changing times, Appliance is there to serve camp owners with non-electric appliance as well. Did you know that, Paul?
Yes, sir, I did. Yep. That's why I go there all the time.
That's right, and they have hats as well, and they also have handymen that...
They
would fix all your appliances, like the big stores. If you buy an appliance there, good luck on getting it fixed.
And they stand behind everything they sell, install everything they sell.
Oh, they certainly do, and they have parts.
Yes, sir, they do.
And they're affordable.
And you know
affordable.
The big thing about that, they sell our books over there.
Yes, they do, and we appreciate that. All right, General Appliance and Brewer, don't forget them the next time you're in the market for a new or used appliance.
Yep.
In your book, by the way, before we get up against the clock, Bob, I just want to say – this is a not only is this a magnificent book because of the beautiful photo. Your wife's quite a photographer, by the way.
Yeah, she's done a wonderful job.
Nice photography. This book is filled with beautiful photos. There's a lot of information. It's well organized. It's well written, and it's definitely a keepsake book. It's one of those special books that if you're a trout person, it's something. It's really a must-have. It's just a really nice piece of work. Good for you, Bob.
Thank you.
Nice work. Stackpole Books is the publisher, right?
Yes.
Well, they have a lot to be proud of with your book. One thing I'd like to do is, in the book, I like the way you single out some top main ponds. One pond I've never fished, and I've heard so many good things about over the years, is Pierce Pond. And you kind of dedicate a chapter to Pierce Pond and talk about the marvelous brookies that are in that fishery there. Last I heard, the place is gated off. Do you have to know somebody to get in there? What's the deal there?
There are a couple of sporting camps. There's more access to the southeast end than
could I get
think.
In there?
Yeah.
I mean, without breaking the law?
Yes.
Yeah.
We're protected by the Great Ponds Act, no matter what.
Yeah.
So you park at the nearest gate, you hump a canoe in, whatever. But what makes Pierce Pond special? It's, for one, it's a chain of ponds. It's three connected ponds. And two of them almost look like one big pond. The other one has a thoroughfare. But it's a big, wild, native brook trout water closer to the masses than pretty much anything like it. There's nothing as good, you know, east of Rangeley. And you'd have to go pretty far north to find a better pond. Size-wise, they're big fish and... it's protected land, and the land trust does a wonderful job in there. But
so if somebody, if Joe Sixpack wants to go in there, he's got to park a fair distance away and walk in with a canoe, or how does that work?
Depends on the year. It depends on there's some access off the east side that's not that far in.
You can't actually drive to it, though.
Right? Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
I've gone in through the camps. The Cobbs camps are beautiful. They're one of the nicest camps, sporting camps in Maine. And there's some landlocked salmon in as well, stocked.
Yep.
And not a great idea why we stock a non-native salmon on a water that has native brook trout. Yeah.
Every night, salmon.
But it's one of those places you can get pretty big brook trout off the surface in a large pond.
Yeah. If somebody's going to ask you, I know one of your... I recall having had this discussion with you years ago, but one of your rules is you don't like to single out places for people to fish. You'd like them to find their own places.
You know, places. I mean, yeah. It would be foolish to believe for a moment that I could out or even protect Sourdough, Pierce, Moosehead.
Right.
So I've always said, oh, Rapid River, Kennebec. I don't have a problem naming those. What I tend not to name is small ponds.
So there are some really small, kind of out-of-the-way trout ponds in Maine that still are really fabulous trout fishing. And probably those aren't places you'd want to disclose on a radio program.
No, what
like
I typically did, how I address those in the book.
Yeah, how do you deal with
it? I did groupings. Fly fishing only, Maine fly fishing only ponds, Maine trophy ponds, Maine state heritage fish waters, things like that. Yeah. And those lists are available, but you'll pick them. For every person who thinks they have a really good brook trout pond, well, all of us have one that's equally good. Sure. And, you know, you never get to mine, I never get to yours, whatever.
Yeah.
So to actually even try to identify some definitive list of the best of the small ponds in Maine, even if I wanted to, that list would be subjective as heck. There are 600 self-sustaining brook trout ponds in Maine.
And are those all heritage waters?
Nope, about 585 are. There's probably 600, at least 600 that should be.
So what happened? Why weren't the
politics
100 slip through the cracks?
No, yeah. Well, there's probably 25 plus that you could argue should have been. The Allagash waters, there's no logical reason why they didn't make the list.
Do you like to fish streams at all?
I fish a lot of streams, actually.
Put the canoe in and fish forages and stuff.
I used to. I do a lot of wading for small streams now.
Yeah. Yeah, I prefer that much over ponds. Yeah, ponds can be very slow.
I tell people, anybody who thinks it's easy hasn't fished one. Right. Nothing can turn off like a pond.
Oh, yeah, well,
you get there one day, you light them up, you go get your friend and say, come on in, you're not going to believe
it. Stream, you know, the scene changes for you.
Oh, yeah.
Every corner.
And the fish move too,
And you may not get as big a fish, but you'll get a lot more fish.
Yeah. I probably fish right now more small streams than I have since I was a young man.
Yeah. There you go.
We have a caller who may have a question for you. Good evening, Al. You're on Maine Outdoors with Bob Mallard. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Al Pinkham. I like to ask him about a pond, a little moxie. You familiar with it?
Yep.
We have a camp at Shirley, and I've fished it for 25 years. And about 5 years ago, the water got all like pea soup in there, and it hasn't been good since. But we used to get 14, 16-inch trout were common in there.
That sounds like an algae bloom of some sort. A nutrient boost. Have you talked to the biologist about what you're seeing?
I asked the biologist, and he said they netted fish in there. So they're still in there, but fish couldn't see a fly in there. If you try, it had to, because you put your line in the water. If it sinks a little bit, you can't even see it. You know,
and that's undeveloped, correct?
No, there's one camp in the whole pond.
Yeah, so something's happened to turn that pond green. I would.
Sewage.
You know, it could be nutrient boost on a small enough pond. Could have warmed. The headwaters could have warmed.
I tell you what happened. About 5 years ago, they cut the wood all around that pond. They cut within probably 50 feet of the pond. I think they cut all the streams coming in there. Their foliage is all gone and probably dried them up or something.
Yeah, what that
water.
Yeah, I've seen that myself where a pond I fished a lot, they cut one side of it, happened to be the high side. There were several of these small seasonal streams, intermittent, whatever, and they're pretty much don't have canopy anymore. And I believe it warmed up the pond. I mean, it's only logical that pull the trees off the tribs and you're going to warm. But it typically takes something more than just warming to turn them green.
Because I used to have some excellent hatches in there, like caddisflies and stuff, and it was excellent fishing, you know.
Al, you might get an answer to your question by calling Tim Obrey, who's the fisheries biologist there at the Greenville headquarters. Tim's a friendly guy and always willing to share information. You might ask him.
You could also get a water sample and bring it somewhere and have him tell you what's in it.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for talking.
Okay, thanks for listening, Al. Appreciate your call.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Yeah. All right. One of the questions we always ask fishermen here, and you're no exception, would be can you name three of your favorite dry flies and three of your favorite wet flies?
As far as dries, I mean, I love fishing what we call the drake hatch, which is a hexagenia hatch, and I enjoy that hatch probably more than any because it's a giant bug at the time of year when the bugs are kind of sparse. So that's one of my favorite dry flies. I like certain attractors.
Red humpy?
Yeah, it's a pretty effective fly when there is not a lot going on. I fish a lot of beetles and ants as well.
Yeah, really,
I think
yeah.
on the small ponds, I tell people if there are five bugs on the water at once and one is an ant,
Use
the ant.
Black ant?
Yep.
Yeah.
And beetles are more important than people think.
Yeah. Okay. What about wet flies?
Emergers. Caddis emergers I use and midge pupa. Those are my favorites.
Streamers?
Streamers, I have a couple of my own, but as far as commercially available, I think a Mickey Finn is still as effective a brook
Always
trout
good.
Pattern as you
yeah,
have.
Yeah, that is. That's a yeah. great
It just
great.
Works.
Small Mickey Finn
yeah.
streamer, yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. Well, good. That was interesting. All right. If anybody wants to get – we're running low on time here. Anybody wants to get a copy of this beautiful book, Bob, how do they go about doing that? Square Tail is the name of it, The Definitive Guide to Brook Trout and Where to Find Them. How does somebody find the book?
www.bobmallard.com. Go up onto the top bar, select the store, and I have signed copies available.
Okay, great. www.bobmallard.com. We'll get you to the website. All right. Anyway, we're about out of time, aren't we, engineer?
Yes, we are. Okay. We're about 30 seconds out.
30 seconds. I want to thank you for being here.
Thanks for having
me. It's a pleasure. And I'm glad to see that you've moderated your views. We'll have to have you back now.
Oh, you've just mellowed.
Oh, yeah.
Since when do old guys mellow?
Oh, yeah, we do.
I just don't think it works that way.
Well, we all do. Yeah. We all mellow. Anyway, nice to have you here, Bob.
Hey, you too, Paul.
Good luck with your new book.
Yeah, thank you.
It's a great
Bob.
Great piece of
Big
work.
Big show next week.
Bob Lehman is going. Robert Lehman will be your guest host next week, and he's got a big Christmas show lined up. A
lot of goodies.
And yours truly is going to get out of Dodge. We're heading down to Florida, and we'll be back and see you guys all in April. Have a good winter.
Well, you too.
And we'll see you all. Well, I'll see you all in April, but he'll see you next week here on
Maine Outdoors.